Now I'm the one smiling. Jessenia brings me the unabridged history of the first six the next day, which is not only a 300-year-old text, but marked classified in the end papers. And I keep my side of the deal, handing over the fables of the Baron. Then I hide away at every available second to read her book, when we're not being lectured by Professor Grady about our inability to check our egos or getting what feels like pointless battle briefs. But while it goes into detail about the complex interpersonal relationships of the first six, and even a little of their battle experience during the Great War, it simply labels the enemy as General Darrymore and our allies as the Isle Kingdoms. Not exactly helpful. The book Jessenia gives me on Saturday is The Sacrifice of Dragonkind by one of Kaori's predecessors, and goes into why Bezgaeth was chosen for the location of the wards. Green dragons, especially those descending from the line of Craed Huain, have a specially stable connection to magic, which some believe is a result of their more reasonable defensive nature, I repeat in a whisper as I pack to head to Samara that night. There's absolutely nothing that can ruin my evening, not when I'm about to see Zayden in the morning. My eyes widen when I open the door and find Varish standing there instead of Bodhi, flanked by his two henchmen, and immediately remind myself to thank Zayden for the wards that deny him entry. A quick step backward puts me out of his reach. Relax, Soren Gale. He smiles like he didn't nearly kill me with his little punishment. I just came by to check your pack and walk you out to Tairn. I slip my pack from my shoulders and hold it out to him, careful not to let him touch my skin so he can't slip through the wards. Then I keep my eyes locked on his henchmen as they dump my belongings instead of glancing to my bookcase to be sure my classified tome is hidden. It's clear, the woman says, and she's kind enough to put my things away. Excellent, Varish nods. Then we'll just escort you to your dragon. You can't be too careful around here, given the rash of attacks these last few weeks. He tilts his head. Funny that most seem to be focused on those of you who disappeared during war games. Don't you think? Not sure I'd ever call assaults funny, I reply. And I don't need the escort. Nonsense. He steps back and gestures into the hallway. We wouldn't want anything to happen to the daughter of the commanding general. My heart bolts at an unsustainable rhythm. It's not a suggestion. His smile slides. I check my sheaths to be sure my daggers are in place, then walk into the hallway feeling the tug of Zayden's wards as I leave their safety. Every step I take for the next 15 minutes is careful, deliberate, and I make sure I'm never within an arm's reach or striking distance. I noticed your squad didn't have flight maneuvers this week, Varish says as we approach Tairn on the flight field. I'll snack if he makes a move, Tairn promises, and I start to breathe normally. We had a few injuries that needed to recover after running landings. He gestures toward Tairn as if inviting me to ride my own dragon. Well, it was noted, as you'll soon see. I guess I'll meet your little golden next week. And Darna. She is safe within the deepest stage of the dreamless sleep. You should be able to see her in a few weeks, Tairn says. That's what you said last week. I mount quickly, my pulse settling as I strap into the saddle. Before last year, I never would have considered that the safest place in the world was on the back of a dragon. Before last year, I might have seen you as an appetizer. He rolls his shoulders and launches. When I get to Samara, I understand why Varish warned that I'd see why he'd noted our lack of flight maneuvers. I might be here, but Zayden is on 24-hour duty in the operations center. And I don't have clearance. An excerpt from The Sacrifice of Dragonkind by Major Deandra Naveen. Many historians choose to ignore the sacrifices made by both humans and dragonkind to establish Navarre under the first wards in favor of praising the spirit of unification. But I would be remiss not to mention the losses suffered, both in terms of the ancestral hatching grounds of each dragon breed and the civilians who did not survive the continent-wide migration that resulted from the opening of Navarre's borders. Or those lost when we closed them. Chapter 17.
Bodhi can't keep moving maneuvers for our section, or more teachers than Varish are going to notice, Imogen says on Wednesday as we walk toward battle brief, moving up the main staircase in a sea of black.
Tern is going to the Empyrean about Andarna, but absolutely nothing can be done until she wakes from the dreamless sleep anyway.
She sighs. How are things with Zayden? I nearly trip on the last step before the doorway. You want to talk about my relationship with Zayden now?
I'm only giving you however long it takes us to reach the battle brief room.
Her face puckers like she's tasted something sour.
So if you need to talk,
this is your chance. Since I've noticed you're still icing your friends out, which is a mistake.
Well, in that case. One, Zayden told me to keep my distance if I couldn't lie to them. And two, between the land nav course, which we failed, and his duty schedule, I think leadership is keeping us apart as a punishment for not producing Andarna. And it's coded, but he says the same in the letter he left on his bed for me. A letter that quickly became my favorite because it delves into what his life had been like before the rebellion. It also makes me wonder what he'd be like if that was still the reality he was living in.
That's just weird, Imogen says, her brow furrowing as her gaze scans the hallway for threats.
It is. I do the same, watching every pair of hands I can see. The timing of the last 2 weeks is just too coincidental for it not to be on purpose.
Oh, no, that part is completely understandable. She side-eyes me. Separating you two would be my first move if I was in a position of power. On your own, you're both capable of terrifying things with those signets. Together, you're a fucking menace. I mean, it's weird that he's writing you letters.
Why? I think it's sweet.
Exactly. Does he strike you as a letters kind of guy? She shakes her head. He's not even a talking kind of guy.
We're trying to work on our communication.
It comes out a touch defensive. You're eventually going to let him off the hook for keeping you in the dark, aren't you? She shoots me a look that says she clearly thinks I should and pulls two hairpins from her pocket.
Better answer quickly, we're almost there. Can you love someone who refuses to be open with you?
I challenge.
One, she blatantly mimics me. We're not talking about my love life. I have Quinn, my actual friend, for that.
She pins back the longest section of her pink hair with quick, efficient movements.
Two? We keep information classified all the time. You'd have the same problem with any rider you dated.
That's not... Fine, she has a point, but she's missing mine.
All right, let's say that you're with someone and one day a battle axe comes hurtling out of his armoire.
An armoire? I really wish you'd go back to confiding in Rhiannon. She shakes her head.
And nearly kills you. Wouldn't you demand to see the rest of the armoire to make sure there are no other battle axes poised to strike before getting back together with them?
We're almost to the lecture hall.
There's always a battle axe.
As we pass the doorway, she nods to Aya, who is chatting with Bodhi, and my eyes flare at her black eye and what looks to be a broken nose.
Because that's normal?
You didn't want normal. If you did, you'd be in a relationship with Atos, she shudders. Or hell, anyone else in this place. But you wanted Ryerson. If you didn't think the man was hiding more than a few battle axes, Then you're mad at the wrong person because you lied to yourself. I open and shut my mouth as we funnel through the wide doors into the battle brief room. Without windows to let the hot sun in, the hall is a welcome refuge from the sticky August heat.
Oh, look, our time is up, she sighs in obvious relief.
Helpful. I miss talking to Rhi.
You want actual, meaningful advice? She takes my elbow and tugs me to the side of the staircase where the third years stand.
Fine. Everyone fails Land Nav the first time. We're egotistical assholes who can't handle being wrong. The instructor just wants you to feel bad about it, which is clearly working. Not to mention that you have bigger issues to worry about than a man, like how you're going to survive the rest of RSC, including the interrogation portions, where they will beat the shit out of you for fun, or like, I don't know, going to war. And you asked if I wanted to talk about your relationship, which implies that you damn well know you're still in one. I bristle. That's not, I'm still speaking.
A third year from First Wing gets too close and she shoves his shoulder.
You don't have to freeze out everyone you can't be completely honest with just because Ryerson thinks that works for him. It doesn't. Hence, all of your issues. And it damn well looks like your friend needs you, so go.
She motions toward the staircase behind me, and I turn, catching sight of Rhi leaning against the wall. Worry pinches her features as she reads the parchments she's clutching next to Tara, oblivious to the cadets passing by on the wide staircase. I start down the steps, dodging more than one overeager first year on my way to Rhi.
I'm sure it's nothing, Tara rubs Rhi's shoulder as I reach them. Show it to Markham after brief. I'm going to get going.
She tucks her black hair behind her ears and smiles again when she sees me.
Hi, Violet.
Hi, Tara, I wave as she leaves, making her way to First Wing seats.
Everything all right, Rhi? I ask, knowing she has every right to shut me out the way I've done to her.
I don't know, she hands me the parchment. I got this with a letter from my parents this morning. They said they're circulating it around the village. I open it, and my eyes widen for a heartbeat before I school my expression. It's the size of the public announcements the scribes nail to posts in every village in Navarre. But there's no official announcement number at the top. Beware of strangers seeking shelter.
What the hell? I mutter softly.
My thoughts exactly, she replies. Read the rest. In this time of unprecedented violations of our sovereign borders, we count on you, our border villages, to be our eyes and ears. Our safety depends on your vigilance. Do not take in strangers. Your kindness could kill.
Your kindness could kill, I repeat quietly as cadets shuffle past. And what border violations?
What do we have here? Markham says, snatching the paper from my hands.
It came from my village, Rhi explains.
So it did, he glances up at me and then over to Rhiannon. Thank you for bringing this to class, he continues down the stairs without another word.
I'm so sorry, I say to Rhi.
Not your fault, she replies, and I would have taken it to him after class anyway. If anyone could explain that, it would be him.
Of course, I force a smile.
Let's take our seats. We make our way to the seats beside Riddick and Sawyer, then take out our things.
How are your parents? I ask Rhi, trying to make the transition sound natural.
Good, she smiles softly. Their shop is booming right now, since they moved another company of infantry into Montserrat.
I blink. That puts the outpost at more than capacity.
Good morning, Markham says, his voice booming over the hall as he holds up the paper from Rhiannon's letter. Today, we're going to talk about the battles that aren't quite so obvious. One of your classmates received this notice.
He reads it aloud, his intonation changing what's obviously a warning to a passionate plea. Professor De Vera stands with her arms crossed, her eyes downcast as he finishes reading.
This is a regional notice, Markham explains, which is why it does not carry a public announcement number. We have seen an alarming number of attempted border crossings in our mountain villages near our most strategic outposts. Why is this dangerous?
My grip on my pen tightens. Are the Peromish civilians fleeing a new offensive? Nausea rolls through my stomach. Wards could protect so many more people. But I'm no closer to an answer than I was when we got back to Bazgaith from Eratia. Every book I've read mentions the glorious accomplishment, but none say how it was accomplished. If the answer is in the archives, then it's well hidden.
Because we can't know their intentions, a first year answers. It's why we keep our borders closed.
Markham nods. But when did we close our borders? As soon as we unified? Or closer to 400 AU, when I think we wiped the history from the books? I shift in my seat as power rises in direct proportion to my frustration. Answers are supposed to follow questions. That's how my life has always worked. Until now, there's never been a question I couldn't answer after a few hours in the archives. And now I'm not sure I can trust any answers I do find there. Nothing makes sense. My fingertips buzz, and heat quickly follows.
Silver One?
There's a note of warning in Tarn's tone.
I know.
I breathe deeply and fight to shove the feelings back into the neat little box that holds all my inconvenient emotions, tugging my shields tight around me.
This could be a new tactic, a third year calls out from behind us, infiltrating our outposts under false pretenses.
Exactly, Markham nods again.
Devera shifts her weight and then lifts her chin, looking up at us. Does she know? Gods, I want her not to know. I want her to be as good of a person as I think she is. What about Kaori, Emeterio, Grady? Are any of my professors actually trustworthy?
What's more disturbing is the propaganda these Peromish people bring with them. Falsified announcements from their own leadership of cities destroyed in what they claim to be violent attacks.
He pauses, like he's debating telling us the rest. But I know it's for dramatics.
Attacks they claim come from dragons.
Fucking liar. Heat stains my cheeks and I quickly avert my gaze when he looks my way. The buzzing rises to a hum as energy gathers, pushing at my skin, looking for an outlet. A disgruntled murmur rises from the cadets around me.
As if dragons would ruin cities,
Rhiannon mutters, shaking her head. They wouldn't, but Wyvern would, and do. Markham sighs.
This notice does not mean we are without compassion. In fact, for the first time in hundreds of years, we authorized classified missions, now completed, of course, to reconnoiter those very cities.
My pen casing groans and power ripples along my skin, lifting the hair on my forearm. Are you all right? Rhiannon asks.
Fine.
You sure about that? She stares pointedly at my hand, and the tendril of smoke rising from the pen. I drop it, then rub my hands together, like that's going to help dispel the energy coursing through my body.
Those assigned riots have reported back that the cities inside Poromiel are intact, leading us to the same conclusion you've drawn. This is a new tactic that plays on our compassion.
He says it with such certainty that I nearly applaud his acting.
Professor Devera?
She clears her throat. I read the reports this morning. There was no destruction mentioned.
Whose reports? The scribes can't be trusted.
There you have it, Markham shakes his head. I think this is a good time to focus our discussion on the efficiency of propaganda and the role civilians play in supporting a war effort. Lies are powerful tools.
He would know.
Somehow, I make it through the rest of the briefing without setting the map on fire, then pack my things in a hurry and force my way past the other cadets to get the hell out of there as quickly as possible. I break into a run down the hallway, pulling the straps of my heavy pack tight so it doesn't slam into my spine when I race down the steps. Agonizing heat spirals tight, building in preparation to strike, and when I finally push through the doors into the courtyard, I stumble forward and throw up my hands to release it. Power rips through me and lightning strikes near the outer walls, far enough away that the flying gravel only impacts the wall. I feel Tarn hovering on the edge of my mind, but he doesn't lecture. Violet? Rhiannon steps in front of me, her chest heaving from obviously having run after me. I'm fine, I lie. God, that's getting so fucking easy, and it's the one thing she asked me not to do. Obviously, she gestures to the courtyard. I have to go. Step by step, I back away from her, a knot the size of the entire quadrant forming in my throat. I'll be late for RSC. Will you take notes?
Because that's definitely the class you should be late for, she says sarcastically. What could possibly be more important than learning interrogation techniques?
I shake my head, then pivot and run before I tell another lie. Into the dormitory, down the steps, through the tunnels, across the bridge, into the healer quadrant. I don't stop running until I'm almost to the archives, and then only my body slows, not my thoughts. The guard stands but doesn't challenge my right to walk straight past the large circular door and into the archives. Paper and glue and Dad. The scent fills my lungs and the knot in my throat loosens as my heartbeat calms. Until I realize at least 200 scribes are seated at the tables and every single one of them is staring at me. Then the organ beating in my chest picks up the pace again. What in Amari's name am I doing?
You've apparently lost all common sense with your control and regressed to where you think you can locate it,
Tarn growls. Fair point. Not that I'm telling him that.
Just did.
A tall figure in cream robes turns in her seat and looks me up and down.
The archives are not open to riders at this hour.
I know, I nod.
And yet I'm here.
What can we do for you? The professor asks in a tone that suggests I find somewhere else to be. I just need...
What, to return the book I shouldn't have?
Three rows back, a scribe stands, then walks forward, shooting me an incredulous look before lifting her hands to sign toward her professor.
Jacinia.
The professor nods, and Jacinia heads my way, her eyes flaring in unspoken what the fuck as she approaches.
I'm sorry, I sign.
She turns to my right in front of the study table, and I follow, noting that the stacks block us from the class's view.
What are you doing? She signs. You can't be here right now.
I know. I accidentally ended up here. I slip my pack from my shoulders and rummage through for the book, handing it over to her like this was some planned meeting. She glances from me to the book, then sighs and steps back a few feet, cringing when she slides the book onto a shelf it absolutely doesn't belong on.
You look upset.
I'm sorry, I repeat. Are you going to be in trouble?
Of course not. I told her you are an impatient, arrogant rider, and it would be less disruptive to our studies if I helped you, all of which is true.
She glances toward the end of the stacks. This couldn't wait until Saturday? I start to nod, then shake my head.
I need to read faster.
She studies my expression, and two lines appear between her eyebrows.
I asked what you were looking for. But I should have asked what will happen if you don't find it.
People will die. My stomach sinks lower with every word I sign.
That's all I can say.
She sits with that for a few seconds.
Have you at least told your squad mates whatever it is you're too scared to tell me?
No, I hesitate, struggling to find the words. I can't let anyone else die because of me.
I've already put you in too much danger.
You gave me a choice. Don't you think they deserve the same?
She levels a disappointed look on me when I don't answer.
I'll bring you a new selection tonight. Meet me on the bridge at 8.
She steps into my space.
Saturdays, Violet, or you'll get us caught.
I nod.
Thank you.
An excerpt from The Journey of the First Six, a Secondhand Account by Sigar Olson. First Curator of the Scribe Quadrant, Bezgaith War College. Translated into the common language by Captain Madeline Calrose. 12th Curator of the Scribe Quadrant, Bezgaith War College. Translated and redacted for academic consumption by Colonel Phineas Cartland, 27th Curator of the Scribe Quadrant, Bezgaith War College. It was only when we pushed the wards to their true limits, extending them far past what we first thought possible and to what I now question as sustainable, that we defined the borders of Navarre. Regretfully, knowing not every citizen would benefit from their protection. Chapter 18.
You're early, I blurt when Zayden opens my door Saturday morning to find me on the floor of my room, surrounded by every history text I own and the two Jacinia loaned me. Shit, I'm supposed to meet her in less than an hour.
He blinks and shuts the door behind him.
Hello to you too. Hi, I respond, my voice softening. The elation of seeing him is tempered by the shadows under his eyes. Sorry, I just wasn't expecting you to make it until noon. If they even let you come, and you look exhausted. Even his movements are slower, not by much, but I notice.
That's what every man wants to hear.
He sets his swords by the door and drops his pack right next to them. Like it's where they go. Like this room is partly his, too. Like his room at Samara feels like it's mine. Neither of us has ever asked for separate quarters. Maybe I can't fully trust him. But I also can't stand to be away from him.
I didn't say you aren't beautiful. I implied that you needed a nap.
I nod toward my empty bed. You should sleep.
His slow smile stops my heart.
You think I'm beautiful?
Like you don't already know that. I roll my eyes and flip the page in The Journey of the First Six, a secondhand account, averting my gaze.
I also think you smell like you've been flying for 12 hours.
It's not exactly true, but maybe it will check the already enormous ego I just inflated.
Gods, I missed you.
He laughs and rips off his flight jacket, revealing the short sleeves of his summer uniform and indecently toned arms. I breathe through the impulse to forget every single worry for a couple of hours by laying him out over this floor and try like hell to concentrate on the text in front of me.
Think anyone will report me for using the bathing chamber?
He's already rummaging through his pack.
I don't think anyone would report you for cold-blooded murder around here, let alone taking a bath.
Lieutenants aren't exactly supposed to be sleeping in cadets' quarters when they visit, he tells me. We're breaking a few rules.
Never bothered you before.
Letting his assumption that he's sleeping here slide, I glance up from the book and immediately regret it when I see that he's shirtless.
Gods help me if he strips off anything else.
Didn't say it bothered me now. He stands, his arms full of fresh clothes from his pack. Just don't want to see you punished for my actions. I thought they were going to find a way to send you on maneuvers today or just lock you away.
Me too. Awareness spreads through every part of my body as I lock eyes with him.
I'm sure they'll find a dark cellar for you next week, so we should try to enjoy this one.
You and I have different definitions of the word enjoy.
He gestures to the books scattered on my floor.
Not really. I scan the page quickly and flip to the next. I think spending the day tangled up in that bed together would be enjoyable.
But since you drew your line, here I am with boring, sexless books. Say those three little words, and I'll have you naked in seconds. He looks at me with so much heat that I do a double take when I glance up, my breath catching. I want you. All day. Every day. Those are not the three words I need. He slides into my mind like a caress. And why aren't your shields up?
Well, those are the words you get without full disclosure. I rip my gaze away. And it's just us in here.
He gives me a look I can't decipher. I'll be right back.
You don't really smell, I whisper, loath to let him out of my sight for even a second.
Get any closer and you'll take that back.
He leaves and I do my best to concentrate on the book in front of me and not the thought that he's about to be naked down the hall. All I have to do is be honest with him about how I feel, and I can have him, his body at least. But isn't that all I really had before? Ironic that it's my truthfulness that can put me out of my own misery when it's his candor I crave. I guess in that way we're alike, both wanting more than the other person is willing to risk. A few minutes later, he walks back in, and the room feels instantly smaller. Or maybe it's the jump in my heart rate, making it feel harder to breathe and not the lack of air. That was quick. I've only read another 20 pages or so. But I don't bother hiding the two books I need to return. It's not like he'd know which are mine and which are borrowed. The less I have to hide, the better. I could make so many innuendos, but I'll refrain. He tosses his things into his pack, then sinks into the armchair and leans forward, bracing his forearms on spread knees. He picks a book up off the floor.
Where are all the books from? You didn't have this many last year.
Mostly from my old room in the main college. I skim the current page and sigh. This book is mostly scribe-centric stories about the Great War that are heavily redacted, with one vague passage about discovering the ability to extend the wards. I crated them before Parapet and thought my mother would have shipped them off to storage. But it appears she's more sentimental than Mira or I thought. They were right where I left them. It had been a surprising discovery. Nothing had been touched in my old room, like I was expected back at any minute.
Really, you should get some sleep.
Jacinia will be pissed if I miss our appointment.
Colonel Daxton's Guide to Excelling in the Scribe Quadrant, he reads from the spine.
That one wasn't as useful as I thought it would be the first time I read it, I joke.
I would say not. He sets the book down and then tilts his head, reading the book I have open in front of me. The Journey of the First Six, a Secondhand Account?
Yes. My pulse leaps and my stomach gets the same weightless feeling that usually comes when Taryn makes a steep dive.
I should have hidden the damned books. Or maybe you want him to know,
Taryn interjects.
Go be busy.
A class assignment? Zayden's eyes narrow when I don't answer.
For research. For some reason I can't fathom I draw the line at outright lying to him.
I don't remember anything about the first six being.
A tick of his jaw later, his gaze jumps to mine.
You're hiding something from me.
Shit, he knows, or he guesses. That was fast.
Violet?
It's practically a growl. He definitely knows.
Why are you researching the first six?
For Erasia. I shut the book. There's nothing in it that's going to help anyway.
Zayden draws a deep breath and shadows extend from under the chair, rolling over his feet like a dark fog.
For you.
Really?
The admission is soft. He stills so completely that I'm not sure he's even breathing.
Brennan told you we have a ward stone.
His words are clipped, controlled,
The shadows begin moving like hands, gathering all the books around me, but the one I'm holding and stacking them. I'm going to fucking kill him.
Why?
Because he's more forthcoming with me than you are? I close the book. Relax, it's not like he gave me your journal or something.
I don't keep one, but that would have been far preferable, he snaps.
Digging around for information on Navarre's most classified defense will get you killed.
Civilians are fleeing for our borders. No one in Navarre knows the truth, and Eurasia needs to defend itself. To protect the people, I'm guessing, you're prepared to take in when Venon inevitably reach Tirindor.
I clutch the old tome to my chest.
You are going to take people in, aren't you?
Of course we are.
Good.
At least my faith isn't misplaced. I glance over my shoulder at the clock on my desk. 20 minutes until I have to return the book.
But it's weapons that are going to defend Tirindor.
I beg to differ. And I'll keep researching until I figure out how the First Six put these wards in place so we can duplicate the process in Eurasia.
I tilt my chin at him.
No one knows how it was originally done, only how to maintain them.
He rises from the chair and his shadows follow as he paces, a barometer for his mood.
It's a lost magic, and you can't deny that it was probably lost on purpose.
Someone knows, I counter, tracking his movements.
There's no chance that someone didn't leave a record somewhere in case they fail.
We aren't going to destroy the only thing that could save us. We would hide it, but we wouldn't destroy it.
And how the hell do you propose finding that record without letting the scribes know what you're up to?
He challenges, turning at the edge of my bed with his hands laced behind his neck and pinning me with a stare that might have sent me running last year. The click of my teeth is audible as I snap my mouth shut. He takes one deep breath, then another, closing his eyes.
The book you're clutching like a newborn.
It's not one of yours, is it?
It's currently in my possession.
Violet. I can practically feel him counting to 10 in his head for patience.
Fine, I borrowed it from the archives. Are you really going to yell at me for trying to help?
Who knows? The question is so soft that I almost wish he would just yell. He's always at his most lethal when he's calm like this.
A friend?
His eyes snap open.
There's a reason we don't fuck around in the archives. That's the beating heart of the enemy.
His gaze bores into mine.
We don't have any friends there.
Well, I do, I stand slowly, and I'm going to be late to return the book if I don't head down there now. So why don't you get some sleep while I'm coming with you.
The hell you are,
I slip the book into the borrowed bag.
You'll scare her witless. I haven't told her anything about you or Eurasia or what's going on outside our borders, so relax.
Go figure, he doesn't. She just knows you're researching classified material. I'm not going to relax knowing that you've put yourself in danger.
You're in danger every single day.
Anger flushes my skin. Someone knocks on the door and he sighs before jerking it open.
Oh,
Rhiannon steps back, almost bumping into Riddick.
I didn't realize you were here today, Lieutenant Ryerson.
She glances over at me.
Vi, we were going to ask if you wanted to come to Shantara with us.
She's busy, Zayden responds, clasping my hand.
Don't be an ass,
I yank my hand from his. Whoa, Riddick's eyebrows rise as I turn towards Zayden.
I've done exactly what you asked. I kept everything from my friends.
I glare into the depths of his soul.
So don't be an asshole to them.
Exactly what I've asked? He leans down, bringing his face within a breath of mine.
By keeping your research a secret?
My jaw drops.
Are you really going to stand here and compare secrets with me? It's not the same,
he winces.
It's exactly the same.
I grip the strap of the bag to keep from jabbing him in the chest with my finger.
How fucking dare he? I'm researching the wards for you. Why do you think I'm so angry?
The tension in his eyes, his posture, his tone equals mine.
Because you don't like being on the other side of secrets.
What the hell is going on? Sawyer asks from the hallway. Riddick scratches the top of his head.
I think
they're fighting.
That has
How long have you been hiding this from me?
Zayden questions.
They're not even speaking,
Rhiannon mutters.
I haven't hidden shit from you. I've simply told you selective truths.
He draws back like I've hit him.
Sorry, guys. I turn to my friends. Trust me, there's nothing I would rather do than go to Shantara with you. But unfortunately, I have to run an errand. Next weekend?
You'll be in Samara.
Zayden folds his arms across his chest.
How is it possible to both love someone and loathe them all in the same moment?
Rhiannon looks between the two of us, then settles her attention on me.
Then the weekend after,
she suggests quietly. I nod. Her brow knits in wordless question.
I'm fine, I promise.
You guys have a great time. I force a smile. I'll let you know if I need your help burying a body later. Riddick sputters into a cough and Sawyer pounds him on the back.
I think she might mean you,
Rhiannon says as she gives Zayden an arch look.
I'm certain she does.
Let's go,
Sawyer says, leading the three of them out of the doorway.
I'll do it, too,
Rhiannon says over her shoulder.
I've never moved anything as big as you, but I bet my signet could put you in the ground without even disturbing the dirt if I'm pissed enough.
She shoots a look at him before walking down the hallway. Zayden sighs and closes the door.
You have some loyal friends.
I do, I agree. Just remember you said that when it comes time to tell them what's going on under their noses.
His answer is barely a grunt.
I have to go. I'm pissed that you hid it from me,
he interrupts.
But I'm livid that you've put your life at risk for me. That's not something I can handle.
It's not at risk. I can trust her.
I reach for the door handle, and he steps aside. His mouth tightens with anger, but it's the flash of fear in his eyes that makes me pause. If I had a way of knowing he was just a little safer in Samara, I would want it. Even if he's being an ass.
Fine, you can come with me, if you agree not to scare her.
I can't control her feelings.
He scoffs. I arch a single brow.
I just want to meet her.
He lifts his hands, palms outward.
So you can see if she's trustworthy by looking at her? Even you aren't that powerful.
I open the door and step out into the hallway.
Let's go.
I'll know. I'm an incredible judge of character.
He walks out after me, pulling the door closed.
Your ego really is boundless.
We start down the hall and turn right into the central corridor.
And just because I'm letting you come doesn't mean I'm not still pissed at you.
Same.
He puts his hand on the small of my back when we pass a group of cadets.
You don't have to touch me for them to think you have a reason to be here. Everyone knows that we...
Knows that we what?
You've been pretty damned clear that we're not together.
Wait, is that hurt in his voice?
I hate the way my ire dulls. It's easier to live in the anger. We head down the central staircase, winding our way past the ground floor, where most cadets branch off, and into the sub-level of the quadrant. It's a maze of tunnels down here, but I know my way well enough.
You would never sit here and do nothing when you could help. Asking me to do differently is just insulting,
I whisper to him once I know we're alone in the tunnels. I'm smart enough to handle myself in the archives.
I never said you weren't brilliant. I never even said your plan wasn't brilliant. I said you're putting yourself in danger, and I'm just asking you to be honest with me.
Mage lights flicker on as we make our way toward the covered bridge that spans the canyon between the Riders' Quadrant and the main college.
Varish pushed you to near fucking burnout, and you didn't tell me that either.
His jaw works.
Or that you wielded in the middle of the courtyard after battle brief.
How did you know? I hadn't mentioned Varish in the letter I'd left for him.
You didn't think Bodhi would tell me?
His shadows stream forward, opening the door, and we head across the enclosed bridge. I don't think I'll ever get used to the casual way he uses his power.
I hoped he wouldn't,
I admit.
That's the shit you need to tell me, Violet.
What would you have done? Flown back here and killed him? He's the Vice Commandant.
I debated it.
He opens the next set of doors the same way. Bodhi has miraculously found reasons for our squad to miss maneuvers, I tell him, as we walk into the main campus passing the infirmary.
And how long is that going to work?
We're twice as likely to find a solution if you tell me what's going... Zayden's head snaps forward and he grabs me by the waist, stopping in the middle of the hallway. But we've already been seen.
Put your shields back up.
It's Nolan, I point out, but raise them anyway as guilt nips at me for letting them fall in the first place. I keep hoping for the moment Zayden promises is coming, where it's second nature, but so far it's maximum effort to keep them in place. Nolan? My jaw drops at how much weight the mender has lost. His skin hangs as loosely as his black uniform, and his eyes are missing their usual spark when he tries to smile at me.
Violet, it's good to see you.
He glances at Zayden, his gaze falling to the arm wrapped protectively around my waist.
Did you draw back because you are under the assumption that I'm going to harm the young woman I've been mending for the last 6 years, Ryerson? Or is it that you think no one knows that you two spend all your time together on the days either of you has leave? Because I assure you I would never endanger Violet, and everyone already knows.
I step out of Zayden's arms. What are you doing standing in the middle of the hallway? You look like you're ready to drop.
You're on it with the compliments today.
Clearly, I need better shields if it's that easy for Zayden to slip in again.
Waiting for someone.
Nolan scratches a few days' growth of beard on his jaw.
And I suppose I could use some rest. It's hard work mending a soul. Been at it for months now.
His smile lifts on one side, but I can't tell if he's joking or not.
You've been well so far this year. I haven't been called to mend you.
I'm all right. I subluxated my shoulder a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if he's as close to Varish as my friends have hypothesized. The thought gives me pause and keeps me from mentioning the burnout. And I've been really good about keeping my knees wrapped. No broken bones yet, either.
Good, Nolan nods as the door behind us opens. That's good.
I'm here, Caroline Ashton races forward, passing us on the left. Sorry I'm late.
Punctuality is appreciated,
Nolan lectures her before looking my way.
Do us both a favor and stay healthy, Violet.
I will, I promise. Caroline shoots a quick glare in my direction, and they disappear into the infirmary, the door closing softly behind them.
She didn't look hurt, I note as Zayden and I start toward the archives again.
No, she didn't, Zayden agrees. Must be visiting another cadet from First Wing.
Nolan looks like he's about to burn out himself. Have there been more injuries than usual?
Not that I'm aware of. Riddick thinks they're using Nolan for interrogations. My face crinkles. But I'm not sure if he was serious or not. It's hard to tell with Riddick.
Hmm.
That's all he says as we descend, the tunnel slanting downward toward the lowest point of Besgaeth. The deeper we go, the cooler the air becomes, and the sharper a pang I recognize as grief resonates in my chest.
What are you thinking? Your face just fell.
Zayden notes quietly as we pass by the stairs that lead up to the main campus.
Nothing.
You can't expect more than one word answers from me and not give the same. He has a point. My father loved this place. He was ecstatic when my mother was assigned here because it meant that he'd have the full resources of the archives. I smile at the memory. Not that he didn't love maintaining the records and libraries at the outposts we were stationed at, but to a scribe, this place is the pinnacle of a career. It's their temple. We round the last curve, bringing the vault-style door into view. The circular entrance is 10 feet across and guarded by a singular scribe who's asleep in his chair. A well-guarded one. Zayden shoots a disgusted look at the sleeping scribe.
Promise me you'll be on your best behavior.
I grip his elbow so he knows I mean it.
She's an old friend.
So was Atos. I narrow my eyes.
If she's a true friend, then she has nothing to worry about.
Look, if she was going to turn me in, she would have done it when I requested the Fables of the Baron last year, I tell him as we cross into the archives.
You what?
His jaw flexes, and he breathes deeply when we reach the table. The archives are empty again, thanks and all. But that's why Jacinia chose Saturdays. Before Mira gave me the book at Montserrat, I requested it. And I didn't think anything of it at the time, but no one showed up at my door, no one hauled me off and divested me of my head.
Because we are friends.
He remains silent as Jacinia approaches, her gaze widening as she looks between us. Her steps slow.
He's with me, I sign, offering a smile. Stop scaring her. I'm just standing here. That's enough. Trust me.
Did you find what you were looking for? She signs back, nervously biting her lip, her focus darting to Zayden. No. I hand the bag over to her, and she slings the strap over her shoulder.
They're all too recent
and vague.
Her lips purse in thought. Maybe we should shift to something about the history of wards in general, I suggest.
Give me a couple of minutes. I have an idea.
Thank you for helping us,
Zayden signs. Jacinia nods, then disappears into the rows of bookshelves.
You can sign?
I whisper at him.
You speak Tyrish, he replies. One is far less common than the other.
We stand there in awkward silence, our argument still festering. At least on my part. I never know how he's feeling, which is one of our problems. By using that one word with Jacinia, us, he's linked himself to me. If she turns me in, he'll be dragged down too.
Try these two, Jacinia signs when she returns, then hands over the bag. Also, I returned yours. Thank you for letting me read it.
What did you think of it? I ask, unnervingly aware that Zayden is watching. Whatever she says next will seal her fate with him.
Solid folklore with good stories.
She tilts her head to the side.
It was a limited printing, clearly done on a press, but not so limited that there wouldn't have been one submitted to the archives at publication.
The look she gives me is full of expectation.
It's an odd subject matter to leave out of the archives,
don't you think? I swallow hard.
I do.
Zayden tenses beside me.
As I said, she continues, intriguing. I'll see you Saturday after next?
I nod, and we leave after thanking her again, passing Nasia, who has started to snore in his seat. We're halfway through the tunnels before Zayden speaks.
Tell me what other book is in the bag.
Guess the argument is still festering inside him, too.
It's the Fables of the Baron.
There's no point lying to him.
You gave that to her? Why?
Zayden's head slants in my direction, and he stops in the middle of the tunnel, grasping my elbow gently as fear flashes in his eyes.
I loaned it to her, and because she asked.
With that text, she could have turned you in. Anger burns in his eyes.
And if I report that she's not recording my requests, she'll be at Markham's mercy.
I grip the strap of the bag a little tighter.
Trust has to go both ways to mean anything.
Both ways, but you're shutting me out while I'm trying my damnedest to open up to you.
Says the man who's never so much as told me he loves me,
if he does. Gods, I'm so sick of having to make the first move when it comes to this man. And today isn't the day to open myself up to that rejection, too.
Sure, as long as you can keep your secrets. Has it ever occurred to you that this,
I gesture between us,
is all because you don't trust me?
I take a step backward.
You expect complete blind faith without giving it. It goes both ways.
I'm the one who doesn't trust you.
Shadows curl around his ankles, following him as he pivots, heading up the tunnel.
I'll see you later. I have to find Bodhi.
He's heading off on revolution business, no doubt, and leaving me behind. Again.
That's all you have to say?
I call out, frustration locking my muscles.
No good can come out of the things I want to say right now, Violet, he says over his shoulder.
So instead of digging a deeper hole with words I'll regret later, I'm going to take some space and do something productive, because this isn't.
It's on the tip of my tongue to tell him that he doesn't get to choose when we have a fight, but he asked for space, and I can do the mature thing and give it to him.
When I wake in the morning, the other half of my bed hasn't been slept in, and his things are gone. I can't stop my chest from tightening at the thought that he's headed back to the front lines, that either of us could be killed at any moment, and the last words we said to each other were in anger.
An excerpt from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind. Dragons do not answer to the whims of men. Chapter 19. My heart pounds erratically as I walk past first and second wings dragons with the rest of my squad 2 days later for flight maneuvers. Kaori stands in front of fourth wing, shifting his weight nervously beside Varish, who watches me with a focus that makes my skin crawl, like he's mentally tabulating how many strikes he's going to make me wield in punishment for not producing Andarna. And the way Solas lurks behind him, his one golden eye narrowed on me, makes me wonder if Varish will even wait until tomorrow. Because obviously, from his angle, he can see that she isn't here, and worse, he looks happy about it. I made it to 27 strikes in an hour this morning with Carr before my temperature spiked, and he seemed disappointed. That makes two of us, considering I didn't hit a single point I aimed for. My arms feel like dead weight after all that wielding. If Varish forces me up to that mountainside again today, I'm not sure I'll come down.
There is something off about that orange, Rhiannon notes, adjusting the strap of her flight goggles as we approach third wing.
You mean like the fact that he torched third squad without a second thought? Riddick questions, buttoning his flight jacket.
And Varish seems so controlled, Sawyer stretches his arm across his chest. Kind of uptight, you know?
Unlike me, Sawyer's only seen him at the surface level. I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth, fighting off the nausea that threatens to expel my breakfast.
It's definitely an odd pairing, Rhi agrees as we reach Claw Section's dragons.
There aren't any third years on the field today, leaving more than enough room for the second year dragons to spread out. But gods forbid Tairn not stand in the front row like the star of the show. I can already see his head above the others from here, and I'm pretty sure I just heard him chuff a sigh of annoyance. Varish's mouth quirks into a polished smile at me, but the glint in his eyes makes the hold I have on my archive's doors weaken, trickling power into my system in preparation to fight.
And what's the deal with the way he stares at you? Sawyer asks, shifting beside me to block Varish's view.
He's always smiling at you like...
He shakes his head. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Like he knows something you don't, Rhi finishes, giving the red club tail from first squad a wide berth as we pass.
Is there some history with your mom, maybe? Some bad blood?
Not that I know of.
They don't even know the half of it.
But how could they when I haven't told them?
But he's obsessed with Andarna.
There, that's some of the truth.
She all right? Sawyer asks. I haven't seen her in a while.
She's been resting a lot. I prepare myself for the utter misery of full leathers in the stagnant late summer heat, then start buttoning as we approach Tairn.
She can keep up with simple maneuvers, but the stuff we're doing now, formation flights and timed rolls, there's no point in putting her through this kind of stuff.
Selective truths.
Makes sense. Sawyer nudges me with his elbow.
See you up there.
You look a little queasy, Reen notes once the guys are out of earshot. Everything all right? I'm fine. I force a quick grin and try to think of anything besides how much it's going to hurt when Varish gets a hold of me. Varish looks eerily delighted that Andarna isn't here.
I will handle this.
Right. Of course you are. Rhee's mouth curves into a sad glimpse of a smile before she turns away, heading for Fierge, who waits on Tairn's other side.
Fuck,
I mutter, rubbing the bridge of my nose. No matter what I say right now, it's always the wrong thing. She's never going to forgive me for keeping all this from her once she finds out.
She will,
he says, his head lowering slightly, but he doesn't dip his shoulder even as I reach his front left claw.
Humans have the memories of gnats. Dragons hold grudges.
I'm going to forget you said that, I tease back.
Be alert.
His head swivels and I turn, unsheathing a dagger in the same moment.
Surely you wouldn't think of attacking a professor, would you, Soren Gale?
Varish glances at my weapon, keeping the same mask of a smile in place,
let alone a vice commandant.
A low growl works up Tairn's throat, and he curls his lip just enough to bare the tips of his fangs. I attack anyone foolish enough to sneak up behind me this year. I roll my shoulder back and lift my chin. Hmm. He leans to the side and looks past Tairn's foreleg.
No little feather tail with you today?
Obviously. Fear slides down my spine.
How unfortunate.
He sighs, then turns his back on me, his boots crunching in the dry grass as he heads towards Solace.
There will be no maneuvers for you today, Soren Gale.
My stomach rolls. I'm sorry? Tairn shifts sideways, sweeping his foreleg around me so I stand under his chest scales.
Not yet,
Varish says over his shoulder, his brow puckering for a second as he notices Tairn's stance.
But you will be. Warnings have apparently not worked, and I am hereby charging you with dereliction of duty for your dragon's refusal to appear for maneuvers. You will mount and fly to your training location with Professor Carr to receive your punishment.
That will not be happening.
Tairn's head lowers fully and his body crouches into a defensive position.
What is going on? Rhee asks, her gaze jumping between Varish and me as she walks back over to me.
Obviously, her first punishment wasn't enough to teach your subordinate, squad leader Mateus, so she requires another.
He blinks, tilting his head.
As the vice commandant, I don't owe you an explanation. Now mount up for maneuvers before you're punished alongside her.
There will be no punishment.
Tairn roars, and from the abrupt head jerks of the dragons on the field, including Solas, everyone heard him.
It is not within your power to summon a dragon.
It takes a second for thoughts to relay through riders, and Varish stiffens.
Your dragon may not fall under my command, Soren Gale, but you do. So unless you'd like to further explore that delicate space between burnout and death, you will mount and present yourself. Even the smallest dragon does not answer to the most powerful of humans, which you are not.
Tairn snaps his teeth, the sound carrying over the valley. Fierge's head draws back, and her golden eyes widen.
And Andarna does not answer to you.
Tairn stalks forward, his head and chest so low to the ground that he nearly touches my hair, and Varish retreats.
I do not answer to you.
Oh, shit.
This could go very bad very quickly. But you, Varish points at me, answer to me.
Does she?
Taryn lunges forward, bypassing Varish entirely and surging towards Solas with an ear-shattering roar, his Morningstar tail lashing the air above me. Solas whips his head toward the ground to guard his most vulnerable area, his neck. But Taryn is faster, bigger, and far stronger. He's already there, his enormous jaw locked around Solas's throat. I gasp as Taryn's massive fangs sink between the joints of Solas's scales, piercing his neck, and Kaori sprints to get out of the battleground. Varish turns and stiffens as crimson rivulets run over Solas's orange neck scales, dripping off several of the ridges. Taryn, what will the Empyrean do if he kills Solas?
Only a rider can be the Vice Commandant of Bazgaeth.
Taryn warns, and Solas lets out a sound that's half roar, half shriek.
Without a dragon, you are no rider.
Oh gods, my heart lurches, the beat rushing to a gallop.
Fine, Varys shouts, his fists balled at his side. She will not pay a price for her dragon's refusal to attend. Not good enough.
Taryn's teeth reach the edges of Solas's scales as I watch in slack-jawed horror.
This is about you.
Solas half roars, causing his blood to pour even faster down his exposed neck as he whips his tail toward Taryn. But he's half Taryn's size and has no hope of making contact, thank Dune.
All right.
Varish staggers forward, and for a second I feel sorry for him.
All right,
he repeats, putting his hands up. Humans have no authority to summon dragons. Rhiannon sidesteps until her arm brushes my shoulder, and Fierge lowers her head, as do Aestrom and Sleeg. Hell, every dragon I can see in my peripherals takes the same stance.
Apologize,
Taryn demands, his voice low and sharp.
I'm sorry, Varish's voice breaks. Apologize to the one Andarna deemed worthy of her bond.
I try to swallow, but my mouth has gone dry.
Did he really just,
Rhiannon whispers.
I think so, I nod. His apology isn't necessary to me, Taryn, really. I'm happy to just not die today.
It is necessary to me, Silver One.
His voice rumbles in my head.
I speak for Andarna while she is in the dreamless sleep.
Varish pivots toward me, hatred and terror filling his gaze.
I am sorry. It is not in my authority to summon any dragon. On your knees.
Rhiannon sucks in a breath, and Varish hits his knees.
You have my most sincere apology. You and your dragon, both of your dragons. I accept.
My gaze darts frantically to Taryn's.
I accept,
I shout, just in case he didn't hear me mentally. Taryn dislodges his jaw with a wet, sucking sound as his fangs slip free of Solas's neck, and he retreats with arrogant footfalls, not even bothering to lower his head or protect his throat. Rhiannon and I fall into the shade as Taryn blocks out the sun overhead. And Varish stares at me with a hatred so bitter I can taste it on the back of my tongue, as Solas launches behind him with a roar aimed in my direction, or Taryn's, leaving behind pools of blood on the grass below. Only once Solas is clear of the flight field does Varish rise to his feet, and I don't need words to hear him loud and clear as he sends one last lethal look my way, and then strides for the end of the field and the gauntlet steps.
Problem solved.
Taryn's head swivels, watching Solas's flight path, and the rest of the dragons in the field raise their heads again. But my heartbeat doesn't calm or even slow at the dread that curdles in my stomach. Varish may have been my enemy before, but I have a feeling this just made Solas my nemesis.
I thought for sure he'd cancel your leave after Taryn nearly slayed Solas, Rhiannon says,
walking the path toward the flight field with me 3 nights later.
Me too, I admit as the bells chime a quarter before midnight. I'm sure when Solas is healed, he'll be right back in my face, or worse.
It's been a couple of days, she glances over at me, and even though there are only a few feet between us, the distance feels insurmountable. Are you really going to make me use some of those new interrogation tactics we're learning to pry the truth out of you? Would you rather I go with the empathetic or more directly confrontational approach?
About?
I nudge her shoulder. She shakes her head in frustration. About Varish's little comment that you'd already been punished once before.
Oh, right. I take a deep breath and focus on my footsteps as we near the gauntlet. A few weeks ago, he got mad that Indarna wasn't feeling up to maneuvers and used my signet training as punishment.
He what? Her voice raises. Why didn't you tell us?
Because I didn't want you targeted. It's the simplest truth.
And he's been targeting you?
She sounds incredulous. He doesn't like not getting his way. I adjust my pack on my shoulders and grimace as we approach the stairs alongside the gauntlet. This is going to hurt like hell. I subluxated my knee yesterday during a challenge, but at least I won.
You really don't have to walk all the way out here with me. It's late. I change the subject before she can dig deeper about Varish.
I don't mind. I feel like I never see you anymore.
Gods, I feel so fucking guilty and frustrated and lonely. I miss my friends. I'm sorry.
It's all I can think to say. Hard to believe that the first years are about to start training on this thing.
I look out over the gauntlet, the 5 ascents of obstacles the first years will have to complete in order to get to presentation.
More like dying on it, she bites out the words.
That too. My knee protests every step, threatening to buckle with each stair I climb. But the wrap holds it in place as I limp upward, my hand dragging along the rough stone that lines the staircase on either side.
It's fucking pointless, she shakes her head. Just another way to weed out the weaker, or worse, the unlucky.
It's not. As much as I hate to admit it, the gauntlet has its place here.
Seriously?
She reaches the top of the stairs and waits for me. Seriously. I begin the walk down the flight field. It made me look at everything differently. I couldn't climb it in the same way you did. The others did. So I had to find another way. It taught me that I could find another way and still survive. The moment on Tarn's back, fighting that venom, plays through my mind and my hand curls around empty air as if still clutching that dagger.
I just don't think it's worth the lives it costs. Most of what happens here isn't.
It is. My rebuttal is quiet.
How can you say that?
She halts, turning toward me.
You were right there when Aurelie fell. Is there any part of you that thinks she would have been a liability to the wing had she survived to threshing? She was a legacy.
I looked up at the star-filled sky and take a breath before facing her.
No, I think she would have been a phenomenal rider. Better than me, that's for sure. But I also know that I can't get the words out. They lodge in my throat, held captive by the memory of Aurelie's eyes